Amos 5:24 declares, "But let justice run down like waters, and righteousness like an ever-flowing stream flowing abundantly." Welcome to our first episode in Season 5 of Iona Speaks about defending self-justice, a platform used for us as women to hear how we can walk in our dominion through the power of voice and the strength of awareness. May this podcast bring hope through enlightenment for every listener on their journey to self-justice in Jesus' name. I am so excited to kick off our fifth season. We're going to do things a little bit differently. We're going to just have great conversations as we actually learn about the power, the importance, the strength, and the vitality of actually walking in being defenders of self-justice. We talked about this last year. We've talked about it in previous seasons, that being a defender of self-justice is not just defending your rights in the legal system. It is that it's more so defending your rights as an individual, as a creation from our God Almighty, who sees us, who knows us, who loves us, so that we can walk in His righteousness, in His creative workmanship that He has set for us, so that we can live in His dominion and He can move through us. So, as we start off season 5, I am so blessed to have with me one of my dear friends, someone who is, you know, you have those individuals who are in your inner circle, and she is one of the ones who is in my inner circle, and her name is Billy Partlow. Billy, how are you doing?
I'm well. I am well. Thank you for asking.
Good. So welcome to the fifth season. We are in this season. The season, you know, number 5 we know means grace. We know number 5 is honoring self. So, and honoring God and speaking of favor. So we're excited about all of His favor, His enabling power that He is going to provide us with, and His strength of awareness, and His honor that we get to give to Him for this season. I can't believe that it's the fifth season. So as we talk about being a defender of self-justice, and you know, you have listened to every season. So what does being a defender of self-justice mean to you?
The word that came to mind was voice. Ooh. Being able to have a voice, being able to advocate for those things that you strongly believe in, being able to advocate for those who cannot speak for themselves.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So the word voice was the one thing that popped into my mind when I think about what you just asked about what it means to me.
I love it.
Mm-hmm.
I love that voice. That's so powerful and so prominent. And we all have voices, and we've been given our voice to be able to speak things into the atmosphere. We can speak positive things. We can speak negative things. We can speak good things, and we can speak evil things. So the power of voice is so incredible, and it aligns itself with the theme of this entire podcast. So thank you for sharing that. So I want to introduce you. I know you, but I want to introduce you to our audience to let them know that you are a native resident of Baltimore City, and you were educated here, and you still live here, and you love it here. You've been married and you've been divorced. You are the proud mother of 2, a son, Devin, who is deceased, and a daughter, Dewey. I knew it was going to happen. A daughter, Dewaywa, who is an Air Force lieutenant nurse. You're also an alumni of Morgan State University, an HBCU, Historical Black College and University. You in your professional life has taught physics and chemistry to high schoolers, and you chose your career by becoming an assistant principal. That is wonderful. How did you enjoy being a principal, assistant principal?
It was different. Well, it was interesting because there's a definite difference with being in the classroom and then being in a leadership position. I enjoyed it because I like kids, especially the high school crowd, because you can talk to them. But it was just, I think for the most part, I liked what I'm doing. I did. But the hardest part was working with adults, which is always, yes, which is always a challenge, working with adults. So, yeah, so I enjoyed it immensely, even though I had, you know, those spots of, and it's difficult when you have to give directives and sometimes you have to say that I don't think this school works well for you. And you have to pull them up. You have to evaluate adults. Adults are not always easy to work with.
I know, because I guess sometimes as adults, we might be stubborn and we're set in our own ways and we just don't want to follow through.
Exactly.
I mean, yeah.
Exactly.
So we should just be like children. Just be pliable. Be open.
But
be
receptive. But we are like children in that because we have these temper tantrums and all. So, yeah, we are definitely adults are really like children when it comes to evaluations, when it comes to taking orders. Some are like children. And that makes the job difficult.
Got you. Oh, my goodness. So, you know, you've also taught space sciences in NASA-funded programs on the campus of Morgan State University. You did that for 8 years.
Yeah.
How fulfilling was that experience?
Very fulfilling. I just enjoy, I'm a science geek. I'm a person, I love science. And the other part about me is I'm inquisitive. I just want to know. I just want to know. Mm-hmm. And so just being able to get into those minds and tap into those resources and to encourage students to say, you know, you can do this. That no is not an option. You can do this. And then opening up these avenues of opportunities and just taking them places where you, it's just amazing what you can do with kids. I have a passion for them. For learning. And it's just amazing. So that NASA, that opportunity, I was actually asked to be a part of it by one of the professors at Morgan because he liked my style. And so I'm saying, oh, okay. And I enjoyed it. I enjoyed doing the experiments with them. And I worked mainly with this was involved high school kids. So I was working mainly with seniors, juniors and seniors. And that I also did as an administrator because I was also the administrator for high school seniors and juniors, because then I had to help them transition from high school, deal with careers, get them ready for college, those kinds of things. So that was right up my alley, you know. So, yeah, that was a wonderful opportunity. Plus, because I worked with kids, it was easy. And I also had an opportunity to work with the students at Morgan with it as well.
Oh, that's wonderful. And you've been retired since 2018 and just now enjoying your role as a grandma with two beautiful granddaughters.
Oh, I am so blessed. I am so blessed.
That is so wonderful. So you've spoken about how family, children basically are so important to you, of being able to, you know, forge their minds, you know, as they're learning and see how they're learning and seeing that growth. How did you do that for your own children?
Well, let me give you a little background information about me. I grew up in a household. My parents were married, but that was all. They were married in name only. And no one, my father was the least educated of the two. Okay. And he always aspired to at least have his kids finish school. My mother was the more educated one. She graduated from a business school. Actually, the business school was Cortez Peters Business School here in Baltimore City. So my dad was a laborer. He was good with his hands. He was a mechanic. My mother had the brains to deal with the business, and he always wanted to do a business. but they never got it together. So basically, education was not stressed in the household.
Okay.
So it didn't matter whether you went to school or not. It was just wasn't the focus. And for some reason, I've always had the smarts to be able to do. By me being the firstborn, I was very much motivated to do those things. Mm-hmm. And for some reason, I did what my parents didn't push. Not that they couldn't, but anyway, I was always inquisitive about and always fierce about learning. And so I just took that into this arena. But this wasn't really my profession. This wasn't what I was actually planning to do. I actually wanted to be a medical doctor. That's what I thought I would be. And I started to pursue that. But God said, no, that's not where I want you. This is where I want you to be. So scrap that program. And this is where he had me. So, you know, he's the one who has the final say.
You know, isn't that like God when he just likes to flip the script on us?
Yeah. Yep.
And we try to go one way and he's like, no, this is where I want you to go because he sees us and he knows us and he knows what he wants to get through us.
Exactly.
And so I love how you talked about because you had a love for learning growing up yourself, then you were able to just share that love of learning onto your students and also to your children.
Yeah, let me tell you a little bit about my children. My son was the firstborn, and he's much like his mother for some reason. You know, the first time I noticed his smartness, I'll say, was when he was 12 months old. He crawled over, walked over to the table. I brought him. I was always having things learning. I read to my children and all, but his first inkling of something was different about this kid was when he walked over to the table. I bought him Lego blocks. They were called Duplo blocks, so they were big blocks. Uh-huh. And he walked over to the table, and he started putting them together, and he built the structure. He was only 12 months old.
Wow.
And I looked at him, and he's standing there, you know, grinning, and there it is, and we took a picture of it. And from that point on, I said, okay, I'm going to follow this kid's lead because I don't believe in telling the kid what they're supposed to be. I want to see what you can do. So I followed this kid. And in doing so, this child started reading at age 3. And by age 5, he was doing math. So in order, he wasn't the kid who was out there playing with the trucks and all. He was over in the corner, little nerdy kid. So I watched him and I followed him and I put those things forward for him. So he was the mathematician, and his sister ended up being the scientist. And I just pretty much followed the lead of my children. I never told them what they could not do. I always encouraged them to strive for. So my children ended up being At that time, they were Hopkins CTTY kids. These were children who were exceptional children who were picked up in middle school. I mean, in elementary school and then in middle school. My children both took the SATs when they were in middle school. And they were taken with the 11th grade.
There you go.
Yeah, that's what they were doing. And it was all because I watched them. I didn't, you know, force them. I just watched them and made everything possible. And as an educator, the sad part about education is the fact that some parents really don't take their children's learning seriously. They don't tap into their giftedness the way God wired them. It's almost like cookie cutter for some.
Yeah.
So when you send them to school, they're not prepared. I made sure my kids that not one teacher in the educational system ever had to provide my children with paper or pencils or pens or anything. Mm-hmm. And the other thing, in terms of the rigors, I never permitted my children to use calculators because I was taught to do math in my head and they were paper and pencil. So they didn't get it until they went to high school and they had to do the high level math. So they got calculators. But that was just me. You know, but I did not force them. Yeah. I just made everything conducive for them to succeed. And that's what I saw. And I figured this, if I'm out teaching somebody else's children, mm-hmm. trying to help them, trying mm-hmm. to give them a vision, and my own children are falling by the wayside, then I'm failing all the way around.
Say something. Right. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Right. Now that's real talk right there. Mm-hmm. I love how you talked about how you watched and you listened mm-hmm. and you followed their leads, especially yep. with your son, yep. Devin, and mm-hmm. how, you know, he loved math. You know, mm-hmm. that's one thing. My son loves math. His favorite subject is math. Mm-hmm. And then his second favorite subject is science. Mm-hmm. And so he loves that. He loves solving problems. He loves creating problems. And that is something that I do believe we need to feed our children on, the desires that they have so that their gifts can soar.
And I'd like to say this. It's very important because we're talking about Black and brown children.
Absolutely.
The children who are the forgotten, the children who slip through the cracks, the children who they say will never succeed, the children who they are building prisons for.
Right.
They are the statistics, and they don't have to be the statistics if we would take that time to give them the same considerations, the same opportunities as the other children.
Absolutely. And they're not supposed to be the statistics.
No.
Because they were created like everyone. We were all created in his image and his likeness to
exactly.
walk in his dominion,
exactly.
to be fruitful, to multiply. We were called for a purposeful life before the very beginning. You know, Jeremiah talks about before we were even in our mother's womb. But then in Ephesians, Paul talks about how we were even created before the world began. So before God even said, let there be, we were already in his mindset. He already knew what we were going to do. He already knew what we were going to be. He already knew the purpose. And I love what you said, because that's exactly what I've tried to instill into my stepdaughter's life, into my mm-hmm. son's life, to let them know that they are purposeful, that they have a heritage, and that they are to thrive in that heritage.
And you know, God is amazing because he gives me a platform to talk to young people,
mm-hmm.
people in college. I even yeah. talk to adults. He just puts these people in my path, and they just feed off of me mm-hmm. as I feed off of them. And I
yeah.
think it's beautiful. Learning is a lifelong thing, and I've always been fierce about it. I'm still learning.
Right.
I'm still inquisitive about things. You know, I look them up. I share. I just
yeah.
have this thing. And I think it's, I contributed all to God because of the fact that that wasn't available. Not that it couldn't have been when I
mm-hmm.
was a child,
mm-hmm.
but it was something that God instilled in me to pursue, even though it wasn't there. So
Absolutely.
I thank God. And I give him the glory for where he has brought me through so much. And it was a challenge being a single parent.
Right.
In terms of doing what I had to do.
Right.
But I did, by God's grace, I did it.
Well, there you go. I mean, that's great. Let's lead into that, because I definitely wanted to get to the part you spoke in your bio. Well, I read your bio, but you wrote in your bio that you had a son, Devin. You speak about your son and you say how he's deceased. And then you talk about how you had to do this as a single mother, raising your children. So talk to us about how, you know, you've talked about the things you've imparted into Devin and everything he's done and the achievements he was making and that mathematician mind and being that little genius. So how was it when he was deceased or even going through that process of being
well,
deceased?
Devin had an illness. He was diagnosed when he was 15. On his way to he was in high school. His illness was ulcerative colitis. Now, we don't know where that came from. The hereditary part of that is Crohn's disease. But he just had that. And it popped up all of a sudden. And it was weird the way I found out, because he was having issues with diarrhea, and I took him to the pediatrician, And he just figured it may have been something that he was eating. To make a long story short, we didn't know what was what. But he was trying to handle it himself. You know, that's how a little strong-willed person is. But then it got out of hand. So anyway, we struggled with that. But to back up, to kind of backpedal a little bit, at the time of when Devin was a child, when they were both little, their father decided that he didn't want to be a family man, didn't want to be, and left me. And at the time, I was a stay-at-home mom. I had given up my career the first time. Mm-hmm. I was a stay-at-home mom. I was planning to homeschool my children, had it all, and then he left. So that put me in a difficult place. So I had to give up that dream. I had to go back out in the work world. I had to be responsible, allowing people to take care of my kids while they were in school. So we had the before and after school care. But the thing that was dear to me, yeah, okay, I had to do that. But every day when they came home, we were family. I stressed that. My children were who God, I was responsible for what I had to do. So basically, I was home, they were home. We spent all our time together, our summers together. When you saw one, you saw me, you saw them. And they kept, I was known for, where are your appendages? That's what people used to call them. Uh-huh. Well, they were who God gave me. And this is a vow that I made. Yeah. Yeah. I said to the Lord, and then I'll get back to that part of him. But I vowed to the Lord, and I said to him, I said, Father, I cannot be in control of what my ex did. They lost a father. But if you give me that strength, they will not lose their mother. I will be with them. So anyway, as time went on, he was fine, a healthy kid. And then all of a sudden, this illness hit. And this illness just pretty much took its toll, but it never crushed his dream. It never stopped him from living his normal life. He just had a lot of medication, you know, all those things. And so he went on, and God blessed. This is how God blessed. In spite of his illness, he got through high school, never missed a beat, got through college, went to Morgan, got a degree in computer science, never missed a beat, was in this program with NSA. He was one of those talented ones, never missed a beat, had a job promised to him, never missed a beat. He was a software engineer, never missed a beat. He was I can't even think of the word. But anyway, he worked for the government as a, it'll come to me. But anyway, he had that job. And so all these things were in place, but yet he was struggling with his illness. Mm. And then after a while, it took its toll on him. Mm. As he was about 25, 26 is when it started to get really. And by that time, he had left home, bought himself a house at age 24. He was living large. But then the illness took over. And so I came back into the picture. And it got to the point where I actually had to move in with him. So I had to leave my daughter here. She was in college. I had to leave her here, pack up, and go with him. And that's pretty much how it was. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't easy. It was a very hard, but I think it would have been harder if God had not been in it. And if I had not had the support of friends and family, it would have been extremely difficult. But basically, it was me, the lone wolf, that God had this. So I was doing the laboring. I was helping him. I was encouraging him. I was with him day and night, helping him through his illness. And I just never expected that he would have died. His illness was the kind, he was like 4% of the people who have his illness end up having liver issues as well. And it scarred his liver. Mm. And he ended up having a transplant at Hopkins Hospital. God even opened that up. The chances of having a young black male or any black male being placed at the top of the list for any kind of transplant or any black person at Hopkins, that was God.
Favor.
That was favor. That was favor.
Mm-hmm.
And God took him through that. Even though he took him home, he took him through that. He extended his life, and he actually extended his life for 6 more months before he called him home. It was like God had orchestrated this whole thing long before I ever knew that I would ever be a married woman, long before I ever knew that I would ever have children. He orchestrated this whole thing, and out of it, he got the glory, and that was the beauty behind it all. Yeah, I mourned. Mm-hmm. I saw my son as he just went down, but I had the joy of knowing that this is only a temporary fix, because he's all healed now. And in the process, I took the time to introduce my children to the Lord when they were little. And that's what we did in this household until they became adults. And, you know, sometimes adult children step away, but that doesn't mean that they stay away. Right. They just step away.
Right.
They step away. But if you plant those seeds, if you do what God tells you to do, he will. He will take care of them. Yeah. And I believe in that. And so I did my part. And when my part was over, it was done. And I have no regrets. But again, he was 31. God gave him 31 years. That is a blessing. With the kind of illness that he had and his accomplishment. Oh, he was a government contractor. That's what he was. Okay.
So and, you'd but, remember it.
But God blessed him in so many ways, and he blessed people through him as well. The testimonials that I received after he was deceased, but the people who got to know him, it was just amazing what you know about what you learn about your children that you don't really know when they become adults. It's amazing.
Mm-hmm. You know, you've said so many great nuggets in there, and you know, we started off this question about, you know, how you were experiencing this journey towards his death. And even though, you know, he had this diagnosis at 15, yet he didn't leave. You know, his time was not done until he was 31. That was another 16 years.
16 years, yes.
From the diagnosis and then on his journey. And even though he had to take, he had an adjustment of life, he still was able to be purposeful, profitable, and prosperous because he was living in the mindset of abundance, because he knew who he was, and he knew whose he belonged to. Exactly. And that's the most important, that's one of the most important things for us as we move forward and, well, as we move forward in life. And, you know, you talk about so beautifully about how you had to make a life adjustments where your, once again, your desire was not the same thing that God had designed for you, yet he flourished through it. Because had this experience not happened, would you have been that fortified teacher and assistant principal and working with these NASA projects as you were, and being able to guide your children into their purpose in the way that you did? So even though it didn't look like it wasn't the design that you had, let's put it this way, it wasn't the desire you had, it became the desire and a fulfillment for you. And so that's what's so important. And I think about, you know, last year I talked about my medical conditions and just the fact that I had to make some adjustments just because of health things. But what I recognized is that I live in abundance physically, spiritually, psychologically, emotionally, financially, educationally. I live in abundance because I live in an abundant mindset.
Yes, yes.
Because we serve a mighty God. And the fact that even though the road that I had intended to travel on, there might be a curve, or there might be some bumps. Those are just adjustments. That's all.
I like what you say about the adjustments. That's a good word, because I never thought of it like that. But then, you know, that's a good, I like that. That's a good word, making adjustments, because we are always making adjustments in life. See, I think this is where we fail ourselves in life, is when we try to etch things. We try to
to
put things, you know, like cement things. This is how we want. We want to. I want this. This is what I want for my life. But the joy of living is the diversity. The joy of living is the freedom. The joy you get to experience as a human. You get to experience things. You get variety. I mean, it becomes dull if everything is cookie cutter. If I had to design my life the way I thought it was, I would not. Every time I say this to the Lord, I say, Lord, you know, if I had done it the way that I thought it was, it would have been a dull life.
Mm-hmm.
It would have been a dull life for me because I wouldn't have had an opportunity to explore this beautiful life that you've given me, even though I've had pitfalls and detours and disappointments, setbacks, and all these things. That's the beauty of the life that he gives. That's the beauty of the life that he gives us. He gives us choices.
Yes.
And see, that's the thing. He's a God who gives us choices.
Mm-hmm.
He's not cracking the whip and said, I want you to do it this way. Although he may say it, but the way he says it, he has a miraculous way of tweaking it so that you do it his way. But it's not the way that you think it's going to get done. He gives us choices. He gives us a free will. And I think about this. I could have been very dogmatic and angry about what happened to me because I watched that with my own mother. Yeah. Something happened between she and my dad, and she ended up being an angry woman for all of her life. Mm. She never enjoyed the life that God gave her. And we saw that as children. There were three of us, you know, and it has affected our lives by what we saw. But I was determined I was not going to do that for myself. I wasn't going to box myself in. But it took me a while to get to that point. It didn't just happen. And I didn't want to make my children prisoners of the fact that your dad wasn't here. And I didn't want to use them as my whipping board, especially my son. And I didn't want to do that. That was not what happened between us, was not their fault. It was none of theirs. They had nothing to do with it. They were innocent. My job was to, my job is to direct them in the ways that they should go. That's what scripture says. I am to direct them in the ways as God has given me to do. That's my job.
Yeah.
That was it. You know, I'm not to sit here and badger and do it. I can't do it. I'm not writing the story. God is writing the story. And so he gives me the ability to do the part that I do as the mom, to do what I had to do. So I had an interruption. I lost a son, but I have a daughter still. So I'm still making that journey. And with her, through her journey, with her husband, her two daughters, I'm still doing the work that he has set before me. You know, I hope I'm saying it in the right way, that it's just coming to me, that I am still doing the work that he has given me to do.
You're saying it the way that you need to say it. And that's the important thing. And what I was going to say before is that I just wanted to honor the fact about how that was so wise of you to not take on the experience that you had as a child with your parents and pass that on to the experience that you now had with your husband to your children. So they got to see through a different lens than what you saw. They didn't see the anger. It didn't mean that you weren't angry. It didn't mean that you weren't upset. It didn't mean that you weren't, besides yourself, didn't mean that you didn't want to say some negative things, you know, about this man who basically said, I no longer want to be with you or my children. I want to desert you. I choose to desert you. I choose to desert my children and abandon them. I choose to neglect them. And you could have said a lot of things, and you might have. However, your children didn't see that. And that's the wisdom behind that.
Yeah. You know, I always ask God every day for wisdom. Mm-hmm. I want to be known as a wise woman. That's what I say to the Lord. I don't care who I meet, who I interact with. I want to be known. If nothing is said is ever said about me when I'm out of here, I want to be known as a wise woman mm-hmm. who walked faithfully with her God.
Yeah.
And who loved people. Love to share. I'm an introvert.
A wise
for the most
woman
part.
And one who loves people, who
loves
likes to
people,
share. Okay.
Like to share. And I do that. And yet I'm an introvert. Nobody believes I'm an introvert. All they got to do is see that I stay to myself all the time. But
you said you're an introvert, yet you can be by yourself, but you can also be in crowds. So
right,
it makes you like an introvert extrovert.
Exactly. Yep,
you're probably an extrovert with introvert tendencies.
But let me tell you about that term. There's a term for it. It's called an omnivert.
An omnivert.
An omnivert. But that's it. See, the Lord won't let me stay where I want to stay. He's always pulling me out. So this is the thing. I don't care where I am in a crowd. Somebody picks me out. It's just the people will come and just start talking to me out of the crowd. I could be in the corner in the dark and somebody will come right over and start talking to me. I say, okay, Lord, all right. I'm not going to hide. All right. But that's the personality he's given me. So, hey, he's in charge.
He's in charge. And as you said before, you've got the choice. Mm-hmm. So that's great. So, you know, you are a woman of perseverance. You are a woman who is resilient. You're a woman who chooses to learn from different situations that have happened to you. And so what information, what advice would you share with a woman who had experienced an unexpected divorce?
I would say forgiveness is the key. You have to forgive because forgiveness frees you. You must forgive. It is ordained by God to forgive. He didn't just say forgive for the sake of doing it. You have to forgive to free you up. Because mm-hmm. the mission is to serve God, and you cannot serve him if your mind is clouded, if your mind is stuck, if you're stuck, you know, you have to do that. You mm-hmm. have to practice that. And I would say, this is my experience. I have, you know, you can forgive people 1,000 times.
Mm-hmm.
You can get mad with them and forgive them. Man, and I think for all the years that I've known this person, I knew I forgave him. But the underlying thing about that forgiveness, I kept saying, you owe me. You owe me an explanation. Well, that's not true forgiveness. And so I said, and it's just recently, and I'll share this. Recently now, I'm with my daughter. But I had been praying, Lord, I need to get this monkey off my back. I thought I forgave him, but then some old thought come and I'm back at it again. So I said, Lord, I need to see, be careful what you ask for with the Lord, because you might get it. So I said, okay, Lord, I need to get this monkey off my back because he keeps coming. See, he's taking up too much of my brain when it's something. So he said,
occupying space that's not supposed to be there.
Space that's mm-hmm. not supposed. So the Lord took me at my word and he set it up. He set it up. I'm in Florida with the birth of my brand new granddaughter 9 months ago now. He set it up. This baby's born. I'm going to Florida to be with my daughter and, you know, the family. And just so happened, he breezed through Florida. What are you doing here? Oh, yeah. Okay. Well, now's your time. You said you want to get it out. And that was the time. And I was so angry with the Lord because I asked for it, but I really didn't ask for it. I didn't know. See, right. Be careful what you ask for. But guess what? It worked out because the Lord said, all right, you asked for this. I'm going to give it to you. And he did. And so we came together and it was amazing that I actually forgave after all these years. I forgave this man and we actually started talking and laughing. And he actually came up and hugged me.
Mm.
Now, mind you, he's married again.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And his wife was standing there.
Mm-hmm.
But it didn't matter because I figured like this. It cleared it out for me.
Yeah.
I needed that. Now, I don't know what happened on his end. It's not none of my business. but it cleared it out for me. And it was just like, I can't get mad with the man if I wanted to, because God opened that door. He sealed it. And I am as free as anything. Honestly, I can't. That's the only expression I can say is God freed me after all those years. Yeah. I had to be, because now he's got another plan for my life, because that was an interrupted plan. Mm-hmm. That was interrupted. See, you're taking too much time. I got stuff for you. You ain't going to be here forever. So now I got you. Now I'm going to continue the journey. And it's amazing what he's doing with me now.
Yeah. See, I love it how you have, there's an interruption that came in, mm-hmm. but it was a purposeful interruption. And mm-hmm. even though you got angry at God, mm-hmm. it's okay, because you didn't allow that anger to control your actions and your response. Mm-hmm. I wrote in the last quarterly newsletter from last year about how you can still be angry. You can be angry with God and just not let it have control. You can bless him in the same part. You be angry and you're still in the same breath, in the next sentence, you're saying, to God be the glory. And that doesn't always happen, and it doesn't come. But I'm glad you said that, because I want people and listeners to know it's okay to be angry. It's okay to be angry with God. Sometimes we don't understand some of the things that he puts us in, or he takes us through, or the pathway that he wants us to go on, or the journeys mm-hmm. that we have to mm-hmm. experience. Mm-hmm. Yet it is all purposeful. And as long as we don't allow that anger to take control over us, yes. that's the most important thing.
I agree.
So,
okay.
So I say, be angry. Be angry. And he does have a scripture, be angry, but sin not.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So
I think that's monumental, especially when you're talking about Christendom, because somewhere down the road, the old people used to say, you can't talk to God like that. You can't be angry with him. It's like lightning bolts are going to come down and strike you dead. Well, he made you.
That's true.
This is a part of your sin nature. Mm-hmm. If you can't talk to your Heavenly Father about things that bother you, then who can you? Mm. We talk to each other. We get angry with each other. We storm away and never talk. And then we come back. I mean, if we can't talk to the one who created us, who know us better than we know ourselves, then who can we talk to?
Mm. Wow. I mean, that's so wonderful. And we have had so much conversation. I'm telling you, every season, my podcasts get longer and longer, yet they are so fruitful. And I love this. And I'm so excited about this year. And I love this conversation. And, you know, while we don't have time to talk about you being the grandmother, we're going to bring you back so that we can talk about the awesomeness of being a grandmother, because I got so much nurturance from my grandmother. Even though I lived in the house with my mother and my father, my grandmother was my nurturer. My grandmother was there for me and showed me how to love others. Grandmothers is a whole nother topic. Grandparents are a whole nother topic, because my grandfather taught me so much as well. And he mm-hmm. was my first hero. So, I love those pieces. So we're going to bring you back so that we can have that conversation. So one of the things I want to do this year is, as we've talked about, you said in the very beginning what you thought being a defender of self-justice is. So now I want you to leave a nugget with our listeners. Who is that defender of self-justice for you, with everything that you've gone through? The fact of you having to bury your son before your desired time frame, for you having to make adjustments because of abandonment and neglect from your husband, from you walking in wisdom, you know, who is now that defender of self-justice as that mother and that ex-wife?
She is a woman of strength.
Ooh.
She is a woman of courage.
Mm-hmm.
She is a woman of determination.
Mm-hmm.
She is a woman with vision. She's a woman that's focused. She's a woman who desires the best for others. And she's willing to step in and help in that situation. She is a visionary. Those are the things, those are the characteristics I see for myself, the growth that is that through what I've been through so far in my life, these are the things that I believe God has instilled in me. These are the things that are still, I'm still moving through life, and I'm quite sure there are probably a few other adjectives I could use.
But
these are the things. This is how I see myself.
Yeah.
This is how I see myself, and this is what I'd like to see for other women, whether you're married or whether you're single, whether you're young or whether you're old. You should be your own advocate.
Yes.
Your own advocate, not just for someone else, your own advocate.
That's it.
And I believe, this whole thing about self, it's just phenomenal. It's a phenomenal concept. But you have to be your own advocate and be willing to stand on faith and step out on faith. You got to be willing to do that.
That's so true.
No matter what is said, you got to be willing to do that.
I love it. I love it. Billy, you have been phenomenal because you are a phenomenal woman.
Thank you.
I love it. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
You know, one of the things that I have said, and you might have heard me say it as well, is that as women and mothers, when we are in position to fulfill our purposes, we're able to demonstrate to our children how to fulfill theirs.
Yes.
And because you were in a position to fulfill your purpose, you were able to allow them to fulfill theirs. So
there are three terms that I will end with this. There are three terms that I apply to myself every day, and and this is from the Lord. And those three words are: I am valued by the Lord, I am loved by the Lord, and I walk in my purpose. Those are the three affirmations that I hold dear to, that I say that, and I always, you know, refer them back to the Lord. I'm walking in my purpose, I'm loved by Him, and I am valued.
Yes, you are. That is wonderful. So as we conclude this episode, I trust that every woman and mother listening be empowered to walk in your dominion as you realize that there is value in your life through all of your experiences so that you can become the defenders of self-justice. Thank you for listening to another episode of Iona Speaks about defending self-justice. And I encourage you to be intentional about who you are, what you do, and how you do it.